You are watching Game Time Decisions. I am Gabriel Morenci. Welcome to the program that puts its money where its fantasies are on the Fantasy Sports Network. Let's do this thing. As the countdown is on, we are now officially just 1 week away from the start of the National Football League preseason. And incidentally, it is the Arizona Cardinals. And it's all coming together today. There's a lot of symmetry on the program. We're 1 week away from NFL kickoff, Arizona Cardinals and the Dallas Cowboys. We're a couple of minutes away from our Arizona Cardinal preview on the program. And our main man, Gamble, is going to join us from, you guessed it, Arizona. So we got a lot of stuff going on the show. Babano's out. Our boy Hustler is in. Babano normally breaks down the CFL with us, but it's fitting because Hustler, of course, TSN Winnipeg, Winnipeg radio, badass radio host, he'll join us. We'll talk about the Alouettes and the Bombers game that's on the board this evening. Countdown is on. UFC 214, an awesome card, man. Awesome card as far as the UFC is concerned. It's a great time of the year to be a sports fan. Major League Baseball trade deadline rapidly approaching. We've got a bunch of afternoon baseball games going on as we speak right now. Late night as far as Major League Baseball is concerned. But we will have a CFL play for you. Well, more than one. And we've been doing really good with the CFL teasers so far this year. So we'll see if that trend continues this evening. And we'll give you the CFL trends of the year so far. CFL fantasy as well. Maybe we'll throw a couple of names out. We'll tell you which games to focus in on this week. But as I stated, the anticipation is building. We're now just 48 hours away from UFC 214. And this really is one of the best cards that the UFC has put together in years. The question is, how many people are actually fired up for this card? We know that hardcore UFC fans are fired up. We know the quote-unquote real fans are fired up. The question is, how many real fans are left right now? You know, the fact of the matter is, more people are talking about the Conor McGregor, Floyd Mayweather sham than they are this epic freaking card, man. We've got three title fights on this card. Or we got three title fights. We've got John Jones comes back to take on Daniel Cormier. We got Tyron Woodley taking on Damian Maia. Cyborg Santos, now in the UFC, takes on the Invicta champion, Tanya Avenger, for their new women's belt. So we got three title fights. We got Robbie Lawler, Cowboy Cerrone. We got Jason Knight and Ricardo Lamas. It's as good as it freaking gets, all right? It's as good as it gets. And normally I don't pay attention to pay-per-view sales. I don't care. It's not my issue. I don't have any stock in the UFC. What do I care how many pay-per-views they sell? But I'm going to be paying attention to this card because, you know, UFC on Fox this past Saturday, it was their 25th card on Fox. UFC on Fox 25. Chris Weidman and Gastelum, right? Weidman won the fight. It was the lowest rated Fox card that they've ever had. Like, out of 25 freaking cards. Like, that's, you know, that's not trending upwards. You know, their worst card that they've ever had. Now, there's a lot of apathy that's around the UFC right now. But the question is, do they care? They made more money last year than they've ever made before. So they're making money, but they're making money on isolated fighters. And, you know, they built sort of a star system, which is a dangerous way to live right now. Now, you know, Dana likes to revel in it. Oh, they say we'd be done after GSP. They say we'd be done after Ronda. People are going to say, oh, we're going to be done after Connor. No, you're not going to be done. The wheel's going to keep going. You're a machine. This guy isn't falling. But the point is, the average and casual fan doesn't care about the rest of the fighters anymore. And I remember about a year ago or whatever it was when Ronda Rousey was still fighting, I spoke to Aaron Simpson, longtime UFC fighter. He's been everywhere, you know, wrestling coach at Arizona State, etc. Told me, yeah, I was sitting in a Buffalo Wild Wings. There's all these great fights going on. They didn't even turn the sound up in the bar. It was a pay-per-view. They didn't even turn the sound up in the bar until the main event when Ronda Rousey fought. And he said, everybody, no one really paid that much attention to the great fights. But when Rousey came, everybody, oh, I want to see Ronda Rousey. So the UFC has spent so much time building up isolated stars that, you know, quite frankly, nobody seems to care about anybody else right now besides Conor McGregor. And I said this before. I said the UFC's biggest fight of the year isn't even their fight. It's in Showtime, and it's a damn boxing match. This is a great card. This is a great card. But, you know, did they market it enough? Did they push it enough? Now, one thing I will say, it's not Dana White's fault, and it's not the UFC's fault that John Jones screwed things up. The UFC did market John Jones repeatedly, and John Jones let them down. John Jones let himself down. Now, of course, John Jones had the image of being larger than life and Mr. Perfect. You know, he's chasing down, you know, people that are breaking into cars and purse snatchers, etc. You know, he wanted to have that Mr. Clean, perfect image when all the time he was actually, you know, doing more coke than Charlie Sheen. And he's getting wasted. He's smashing his car up all the time. Now John Jones is honest. Well, you know, he's honester. And I like what he said the other day. He goes, I got to be who I am. I'm not Michael Jordan. I tried to pretend I was like Michael Jordan or something. I'm not Michael Jordan. He goes, I do drink. I smoke marijuana. But I am a Christian. And I happen to be the best fighter in the world. So he's sort of embracing it right now. And his popularity went up because of it. People like realness. But Daniel Cormier believes that John Jones's realness was built on the back of steroid use. Now, of course, John Jones had to withdraw because of failed test. Now, he blamed it on sexual performance enhancer. Seems to be the go-to deal with athletes right now. Oh, no, it's because of a sexual thing in a bed. Personal stuff. Now, I like John Jones. I like his new attitude. I like his honesty. He seems to be happier and more at peace with himself right now. But you'd have to be pretty freaking naive to believe that, you know, that Daniel Cormier isn't right. Now, it's been a big discussion. And John Jones, I think, made a little bit of a mistake this week by allowing Cormier to get into his head with this thing. Because Cormier basically stated, you know what, people say he didn't look good against OSP. That's who he is because he's not juiced anymore. That he used to be juiced. And the fact of the matter is, you look at John Jones right now, he doesn't look the same. He used to have muscles like bulging out of his shoulders. And, you know, he was massive before. Yeah, he's not quite as massive anymore. I'm not accusing anybody of anything, but the fact of the matter is he did fail tests, right? He did. So it's hard for us to believe John Jones right now, and I don't want to rip John Jones, but it's hard for us to believe John Jones when, you know what, I had John Jones face-to-face, all right? The kid was like 3-0 only at the time. 4-0, I told people, this is the future champion of the world. I guarantee it, this kid's going to wreck people. I'm doing a show live in a bar. Clay Guida, Heath Herring, Kenny Florian. The drinks are flowing. John Jones looked at me and goes, you know what? I've never drank before in my life. He says, I've never drank before in my life. But, man, you guys are having so much fun. I think I'll just have a shot of tequila. He had about 16 shots of tequila, all right? The guy wasn't even drunk after. And you know, I remember I looked at someone and I said, well, either this guy's metabolism is Superman and alcohol doesn't affect him, or he's probably not telling the truth when he said he never drank before. And then, you know, I've never done cocaine before. Snort, snort. I've never, you know, I don't drink and drive, smash, smash. So at this point, you know, it is what it is. If I was John Jones, instead of denying it and being exposed at some point in time, instead of denying it, just say, man, you know, live in the past all you want. I'm ready to kick your ass on Saturday. Because the bottom line is about 75% to 80% of the fighters were juiced up before. Now probably about 25% of them are, but they'll get caught. Before, they wouldn't get caught. They didn't get tested. They didn't care. Now they do care. Now you will be exposed if you cheat. The question is, was John Jones cheating? And if he was, does it matter this Saturday? It's a hell of a fight, man. You know, John Jones has never lost before. That Hamill fight's not a real loss. That's not real. And Daniel Cormier is a 38-year-old man. It's only lost one fight in his life, and that's to John freaking Jones. Bring it on, because this is as real as it gets.
Ezekiel Elliott, Carl Anthony Towns, Corey Seager. Those are the rookies of the year, much like the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. The fastest growing fantasy sports network on radio is completely free, 24/7. Listen to us live at fntsy.com/radio or download the app right now in the Google Play Store or on iTunes.
Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. All right, we're talking UFC 214. Great card. Lou from Gamblu.com will join us in a couple of moments' time. I have my Arizona Cardinal preview to break down. I'll tell you what, I like this football team a lot this year. Speaking of football, we've got some CFL on the board tonight. We've got the Montreal Alouettes and the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. Let's send it to Winnipeg right now. Andrew Patterson, a.k.a. the Hustler, joins us. I joined Hustler on a weekly basis on his very, very popular radio show. He now joins us on our not-so-popular television show, Game Time Decisions. Hustler, what's going on?
Gabe, coming to you from beautiful Winnipeg, Manitoba this afternoon. It is steamy. It's probably about 28, 29 degrees, sunny, an absolutely glorious day for a football game. And we should have a good one between two teams that relatively evenly matched, I would say, in the Alouettes and the Winnipeg Blue Bombers tonight at Investors Group Field. Should be a great crowd and doesn't get much better conditions for a little summer CFL football, I'll tell you that much.
Well, I got to tell you, Hustler, it's the first time I've ever heard the words beautiful and Winnipeg used in the same sentence before.
Well, that's because you live in Toronto, Gabe. You
know, I know,
get out of the
I know.
GTA once in a while.
I do. No, I know. Winnipeg, beautiful, beautiful city, beautiful weather, great fans as well. It's going to be a great atmosphere this evening. All right, a couple of facts. We're already in week six. It's hard to believe, Hustler. NFL preseason actually starts next Thursday. But the quality of football has been pretty good in the CFL. A lot of times, it'll be kind of bad, and then in September it sort of picks up. It's such a quarterback-driven league. But the quality of play has been very good. The officiating has been better, I would say, as well. Penalties are down. And get this, there's been 21 games. 15 of the league's 21 games have been decided in the final 3 minutes so far. The winning margin so far through the season, 7.2 points per game, is the smallest it's ever been in league history. You look at the Red Blacks, 5 of their 6 games have been decided by 4 points or less. And I talked about this off the top of the program, Hustler. Every CFL first half seems to go under, and then it seems to open up as the game goes along. But the underdog teased to the under this year has been very, very profitable in the CFL.
Oh, it certainly has been. And, I mean, just you mentioned all those stats of the slower starts and big second half. I mean, the Bombers are a perfect example of that. At least in their first 3 games, they weren't even getting first downs in the first quarter. Like in Saskatchewan in week 1, they were down 17-3. Bang, they rattle off 31 of the next 34 points. We saw it again in BC last week in that crazy game that ended on that missed Medlock field goal that ended up 45-42. The Bombers in particular, when you're looking at this game today, have been very, very slow starters. And it has it has really hampered them. They've been playing catch-up. The one game they didn't get in a similar situation was their last home game against the Argos. That was the one that they won by 8, the one, if you can call it, a comfortable cover. It really was a closer game than the score showed. But they got it done with a bit better of a start, mainly because they returned the opening kickoff to the house. The offense still didn't do anything. But the Bombers, I think, are smarting from that loss. They realize they probably should have come back with a win against BC. They let that one slip away. And when you look at this game tonight, I mean, Montreal, for my money, probably played their best game of the season in a losing cause against Ottawa last week. So it's going to be the Montreal defense, which has been very good so far against the inconsistent but at times deadly Bomber offense. I really think the Bombers are going to make a statement today and come up at least with a much better first quarter, first half. And if they can get that lead, I can't imagine them blowing it like they did against the high-powered BC Lions and Travis Lule in the fourth quarter last Friday night.
Yeah, the Alouettes are 2-3 on the year, but they're playing very good football, as we saw with their win over the Calgary Stampeders. Went down to the wire against the Ottawa Red Blacks. Their defense is spectacular. The Alouettes are 5-0 to the under on the season. Meanwhile, the Bombers are 3-1 to the over. As you mentioned, offense versus defense, something's got to give in this situation. You know, the Alouettes' offense is slowly improving as well. We're seeing Durant get a little bit of chemistry going with Jackson, a friend of the show, Nick Lewis. The guy's ageless. Underwood, they've got some talent, the Alouettes. You know, the Alouettes are 5-0 to the under, Hustler, but I think this is a game tonight where I think we could have some points put up on the board. I think Montreal will be able to score a bit. Winnipeg's a little bit vulnerable defensively, but they're strong offensively. I think we can get there, man. It's only 50 and a half. Once again, we get into the teaser territory here, but I like the Bombers. I think they're going to win this game. And I also like the Bombers to tease this down to just over 43 and a half. Get the Bombers plus 3.5 over 43 and a half.
No, you make good points. I mean, listen, you know, being here in Winnipeg and following the team, you know, we want them to do well. But as a wise man once said, it might have been you, nobody ever got rich laying points with the Bombers. All that being said, though, there's a lot to prove. It's a big game for Winnipeg considering how incredibly tight and competitive the West is. Really, you're going to have a very good football team from the West, probably moving over in the crossover to the eastern side of the CFL playoffs. And it's a matter of keeping pace with very quality teams in BC, who the Bombers just lost to, and, of course, Calgary and Edmonton, who by most people's rankings are right there at the top of the league as far as the CFL power poll.
Yeah, I think I got that line from years ago because when I was stupid in the late 80s, I used to bet against Notre Dame all the time. And, you know, they won the national championship with Tony Rice. They beat Major Harris in West Virginia. And I don't know. I think I swear, because I don't think I invented it, man. I think I heard when I was a kid, somebody said, you know, nobody's getting rich betting against Lou Holtz and Notre Dame this year. It sort of stuck with me, you know. It's like no one's gotten rich betting against Bill Belichick either over the last 12, 13 years.
Exactly. Things are different around here in Winnipeg. There's been a lot more consistency with the club. You know, there wasn't a big house cleaning as they've had in previous years. You know, Matt Nichols being back at quarterback after going 10-3 after being the starter last year, what was big for the Blue Bombers. They do have their issues on the defensive side of the football. Last year, really, their bread and butter was a ridiculous turnover ratio, yeah, where they won just about every single game, and that's a little more random. The Bombers are certainly going to want to tighten things up a little bit on defense, and really, this is a great team to do it against. Montreal, you know, is getting better, but they still wouldn't be one of the offensive juggernauts in the league. So, you know, I know the Bombers are going to try and put a few into the end zone and play some solid defense, and I'm kind of with you on a lower scoring game at the beginning, but definitely enough points, I think, to get to that 50.
Yeah, I can see the Alouettes. The Alouettes have a hard time getting past, like, 21 points. If they can get up to 24, I think the game's going to go over the number. I wouldn't be surprised if we're looking at, like, a 30-24-style football game. The game of the week, the Lions and the Eskimos. The Eskimos are the only undefeated team in the league, but I'm not really sure they're the best team in the league, Hustler. You have to give them credit because they find ways to win football games, but they've never really looked good for a full 60 minutes in any of their games this year.
No, you know, that's true, and I think back to that epic game the Lions and Eskimos played in week one where Edmonton came back and won right on the final play of the game. You know, this comes down to two very good teams, very close teams. The difference for me is Mike Riley. The way he broke the hearts of the Hamilton Tiger Cats and their fans last week showed that, you know, when the game is on the line, Mike Riley really is at another level than just about every other quarterback in 12-man football. I think that the Eskimos are a team that are better, actually, than they've played. Their record is what it is. They've had some close games that maybe shouldn't have been as close as they have been. Obviously, their special teams touchdown for Hamilton put them behind the eight ball last week, and they still got it done at the end. And listen, for all that BC does well, we saw the Bombers completely turn that game around and laid up the scoreboard in the third quarter after making some adjustments. I think that this is a statement game actually for the Eskimos. I like Edmonton to cover the number, and I think we're going to see Edmonton sort of make a much better case that, well, yeah, they're undefeated. This is the weekend they'll let people know that the road to the Grey Cup, at least in the West, is going to go through northern Alberta.
You know what? I agree with you in this instance. BC are a good football team, and I think Edmonton have somewhat underachieved, but they flicked the switch. I think the Eskimos are due for a full 60 minutes. I watched that game against BC. Edmonton were the better team in that football game. And as far as Mike Riley is concerned, it's no secret. You look at the Eskimos' uniforms, it's like the Green Bay Packers. But when you talked about Mike Riley and you said, you know, at the end of these games, he just makes plays. And he sort of reminds me, he's almost like the Aaron Rodgers in the CFL right now. He remains confident, he remains calm, and he just starts zinging the ball, man, in the last couple of minutes of these games. Don't forget, Adarius Bowman was out last week as well. I just find BC to be a little bit flaky, and I have a hard time. I like Wally Buono, but I have a hard time betting on coaches, Hustler, that don't wear headsets. It's a sticking point.
I'll tell you what, we saw Jeff Reinbold, the defensive coordinator of the Hamilton Tiger Cats, in the worst position in football. That's standing on the sideline helpless as Mike Riley's got the ball in his hands in the final minute with a score winning the game.
Yeah, I don't know. I think Reinbold might be helpless if you and I were the quarterback and wide receiver. Argos and Riders. Argos are a good football team this year. And it's, you know, you're talking about coaches. You know, Mark Trestman, listen, there's some good coaches in the Canadian Football League. There are. You know, Wally Buono knows the league like nobody else's business. I get it. Chris Jones thinks he's Bill Belichick, but, you know, he's a good football coach. You know, Dickinson, you go down the list of coaches. There are some good coaches in the CFL. But Mark Trestman's on another level, Hustler. He just is. And not just because, oh, he coached in the NFL, but the guy was an offensive coordinator in the NFL in the 80s. He's been around the highest levels of football his entire life, and he gets it. He's just an offensive genius. And you look at the stability of the Argos on the field, and they're a scary team, Hustler, because there's not, you know, there's a lot of new guys here. Once this team really gets chemistry and they bond as the year goes on, they're going to be a dangerous team come playoff time. They could go to the Grey Cup, this team.
Well, you know, and especially when you consider how weak the East is, a one-year turnaround for the Argos is certainly not out of the question. And listen, as much as Trestman deserves massive amounts of credit for what's going on right now, the difference for the Argos in some of these games, and we saw it on Monday night, was their defense stepping up when they needed it the most. Ottawa comes back to tie the game. What happens next? Boom, a pick by Marcus Ball. They get the ball back, and boom, it's in the end zone, and they get their 7 points. Against a team like Saskatchewan that's not going to put up 45 points, the ability to get that big takeaway, get the punting team on the field when you need to, is massive. And listen, you know, there'll be ups and downs for the Argo offense, but if their defense can consistently give them the field position and give them the ability to win that game, I'll put my money on Mark Trestman in close games in the fourth quarter against teams like Saskatchewan every weekend.
Yeah, hard not to take the 3 points here. All right, Hustler, we've only got a minute left here. Tie Cats and Stamps, it's 13. Got a sort of feel for the Cats right now. You know, they're the only winless team in the league, and it's not happening this week. I don't see an upset special happening here.
No, I don't see them winning on the road in Calgary, absolutely. What we'll be interested in just to see what we get out of Hamilton. I don't think anyone expects them to win, but this could go one of two ways. They could play a tough game like they did against Edmonton and make this a game for the 60 minutes, or this could be out of hand early. And how Hamilton comes out early and handles Bo Levi Mitchell and the Stamps offense is going to be the decisive part of the game. This is a real tough one to get on. I mean, no one, I think, is too excited to back the Ticats on the road right now. But 13.5 is a massive number for Calgary, a team that knows they're going to win and sometimes just sort of puts the brakes on in the fourth quarter if they don't need it, much like we saw last week against Saskatchewan, although they did cover that big number. I believe it was 10. This one could be over early, and man, it's looking like a long season for the Hamilton Tiger Cats, going both games in Edmonton, in Alberta, their next 2 weeks, staring 0-6 right in the face.
Hustler, always a pleasure, my man. Thanks for joining us.
No problem, Gabe. Talk to you soon.
There's Andrew Patterson with us, a.k.a. Hustler. Winnipeg Blue Bombers and the Alouettes. We'll have some picks up for you for that a little bit later on the show. Lou from Gamblu.com joins us next.
Quarterback to receiver hookups, running back depth analysis, rookie values in dynasty leagues, deep sleepers, training camp battles. These are just a few of the in-depth features you will find inside the 2017 RotoExperts.com Exclusive Edge Fantasy Football Package. Plus, you get a full year of in-season coverage as a bonus. Get the Exclusive Edge Fantasy Football Package now at RotoExperts.com. Enter free radio at checkout for your special discount.
Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. I am Gabriel Morenci. Let's talk some UFC. UFC 214, the countdown is on. One of the most epic cards in recent memory, actually. If you look at the so-called 4th of July weekend card, supposedly supposed to be the biggest card of the year, was a big dud. We talked about this off the top of the program. Last week's card was anticlimactic. Lowest rated card in UFC Fox history through 25 UFC on Foxes. I'm curious to see what the pay-per-view numbers are going to be like for this card, because this card's as good as it gets. But it's actually a tricky card to bet on. I tell you guys this all the time. Every UFC card is different. Sometimes it's like, man, not a very, there's no big names or whatever, but there's a lot of good bets. You know, this is like great for fans because, it's a tough card to bet on, but that's why we bring in Lou from Gambloo.com to help us navigate our way through the odds of these fights. What's going on, Lou? How you doing?
I'm doing great, Gabriel. And, as we have been writing at Gambloo.com, all month long we've tried to manage ourselves because there's been a lot of cards, and go easy and bring profit into 214, which is exactly what we've done. We're profitable for July, and we're going to invest it in 214.
All right, so I'm looking at the main event here, Lou. I want to get right down to business, and if you want to profit, check out Lou's website. But Cormier and Jones, I've only bet against John Jones once in my life, and I've known John since he came into the UFC. So I've ridden the wave with him, but I bought into Cormier last time. And I still regret it. But I look at the number right now, and I'm almost forced to buy into Cormier again. There's no value here. It's a hell of a fight. But if you're betting on John Jones, I don't see how you can legitimize it. Laying 270 with a guy coming off that long layoff. And then you got Daniel Cormier. Big plus money here. What do you make of this fight? And I'll tell you what's interesting here, Lou. The odds makers think this fight's going the distance. It's actually minus 163 that this fight's going to last 25 minutes.
I have a lot to say about this fight. And we'll start with the first fight, in which Jones opened minus 170, Cormier plus 145, and it closed Jones minus 240, Cormier plus 185. Okay, so Jones closed the favorite, won a fight that I just rewatched a few days ago, and that was one close decision fight. I would tell you that based on that, we now look at the openers based at where Five Dimes opened this second fight, John Jones minus 280, Cormier plus 220, and I'm looking at it right now, and it's Jones minus 270 and Cormier plus 230. So that basically what we're seeing is most people believe that based on the first fight that John Jones should be a rightful favorite again over Cormier, which I think is logical, and I think that's reasonable. Whether he should be a favorite to this extent at current minus 270 against Cormier's plus 230, I think I can present some arguments that would make someone think that number's off and not reflective of how competitive this fight is going
to
be.
Well, the biggest thing that catches my eye, there's two things, and we'll get to the elephant in the room in a second here, but the biggest thing that catches my eye here is John Jones has only fought in once since beating Cormier in 2015, and that was 16 months ago. That was against OSP. At least Cormier fought in this past April as opposed to last April. So we're talking about a freshness and, a ring rust situation. So it's been 16 months for John Jones, and we've seen, some guys can blast through the so-called ring rust, other guys don't, but it's a little bit different for Jones because some guys might not fight for 14 months or something, Lou, because they were injured, not because their life fell apart, you know what I mean? So there's a totally different dynamic here of John Jones trying to rebuild his life, his brand, etc. And now we get to the elephant in the room, in which Cormier says, the reason you didn't look so good against OSP is because you were juicing the whole time. We all know it. You were on steroids. Now you're not, and I'm going to kick your ass because you cheated last time. John Jones really seems to be taking this one personal. He went on a big diatribe about, you're insulting my character, etc. But like I said off the top of the program, Lou, it's like the little boy that cried wolf. And I'm not here to rip John Jones, but the guy's lied to us so many times, I don't believe him. And the fact is, if we look at John Jones's body right now, you often talk about it with the Brazilians, Lou, pre-testing, post-testing. John Jones doesn't look the same right now. Let's be real.
I'm going to address a few other points before I get to that point, if I may. Number one, I completely agree with you that inactivity is a huge consideration if you're looking at Jones at, you know, opening price of minus 170 in the first fight. Now you got to pay 280 for him. He's been tremendously inactive. Meanwhile, not only has Cormier been active, and he's fought five fights since they first fought to Jones's one fight against OSP, where he did look a little pedestrian. I attribute that to some rust, but I look back to Cormier and see he's had five fights and one against two dominations of AJ mentally. And then Gustafsson, tough-ass fight, and, you know, one against Teixeira. So you've got some, and then he threw Hendo around, six back. Cormier's activity is an advantage for him, while John Jones's inactivity is a disadvantage. Let's then look at age, because we have to acknowledge Cormier at 38 years old. Jones has made him wait for
that's the biggest shame.
He didn't want to wait for this fight.
That's the biggest shame in this rivalry, that we don't get to see a Cormier at 32 years old or whatever against Jones right now, because this is the first nemesis really Jones has. Well, Gustafsson, let's say, too, but it's just too bad. There's a big advantage here. I mean, Jones is a 30-year-old man, right? It's a big difference.
The difference besides age also happens to be his size and length, and we talk about that here ad nauseum. So don't think for a minute that Jones doesn't have dynamic reasons why he should absolutely be the favorite here. But I also want to bring in a couple of intangibles. You said earlier that this fight may look like it's going to go, you know, to the distance, and I tend to agree with that.
Well, I said the odds makers. The odds makers say
this. The first fight was very competitive, very close. I happen to believe this goes to a decision. I also happen to believe that John Jones has done nothing to endear himself to Dana White nor the organization in the last year. So let's just play a little conspiracy theory, and I'm not accusing anybody of anything, but what happens if this fight ends up in a really, really close decision? I myself believe it's going to be very, very hard for Jones to win a decision here, not only because he's been messing with the wrong people in the organization, but what brings more money than Cormier and Jones 2? Cormier and Jones 3.
I can't dispute that. I'd be naive if I said, no, nobody ever thinks like that. All right, listen, Lou, time's flying by here. We already only have a couple of minutes. I almost think we got to get you back tomorrow to get the rest of the fights we're not going to get to. So who are you pulling the trigger? You're taking a shot with Cormier here in the underdog, aren't you?
I absolutely am.
And, you know, so we said it's minus 163 to go the distance. If you don't think that, listen, it's three and a half rounds is minus 188, guys. So, like, yeah, the odds makers aren't expecting this to be a quick fight. Maya and Woodley, dangerous fight for T-Wood here, man. I think, you know, it's one of these deals, Lou, when you and I talk about it, that the right guy's favored, but the number's a little bit too high, but I'm not tempted enough to take Maya because I think Woodley probably wins. The thing that catches my eye in this fight is the over-under. 1.5 rounds. Minus 163 to the over. Woodley's a cautious fighter. He's not a reckless guy. And Maya's got to be very careful as well. That jumps off the page to me, the over 1.5. What do you think? Am I crazy?
I almost see the total being inverse. I think the longer it goes, most think Maya would have the chance. I think it's opposite. And most think Woodley's going to burn out. I think the longer it goes, the more chance that that it's bad for Maya, because I don't trust his gas tank. If you like Maya, I think you got to look under. If you like Woodley, it's the over. But I don't want to hang my hat on the total. Maya's got a lot of advantages here. The issue for this fight is Woodley has 95% takedown defense, and Maya has to get it to the ground to win. I can't answer whether it's going to the ground or not, but it's sure going to be fun to watch.
All right. Cyborg and Avenger. I'm taking a little shot with the underdog guy here. I think a lot of, listen, Santos, she's a machine. She's a cyborg, et cetera. I have a lot of respect for her. But she's always in this price range. And it's not like Tanya is just another stiff. I think the casual fan just figured, oh, I don't even really know Tanya Avenger. Oh, she must not be that good. She's Invicta. Yeah, she's won 11 fights in a row, man. You know, she hasn't lost since 2011, Avenger. She's never been knocked out in her life before, Lou. She's tough. You know, I'm not the biggest Invicta expert, but I've had Tanya on the show a lot over the years, so I've followed her career. She's freaking tough. She's not going to be intimidated by Cyborg. I'm not calling an upset victory here, but the over-under is 1.5, man, plus 200 to the over. And crazier things have happened. What you have an opinion on this fight?
Yeah, I think if it goes to the floor, you're going to be very encouraged because Evinger is a grinder, a mauler. She wants to get in close. But she's going to have to take this to the ground, but she's going to be tremendously undersized against Cyborg. Will she be able to get it to the ground? That's the question again in this fight, in my opinion.
I guess we couldn't get a picture of Evinger as the Invicta champ.
She's a grinder.
Anonymous. All right. Lawler and Cerrone. I don't want to jinx this, but this to me, this is the best bet of all these. You know, I think it's the safest one. And I'm not, and nothing's safe in MMA, but I don't see how Cowboy beats Robbie. The one thing the Cowboy struggles with is sort of the bullies, the heavy hitters. We've seen he got knocked out against Masvidal. He got knocked out against, Dos Anjos? We go down the list here. Robbie's just going to be too big and too powerful for him, in my opinion. I'm surprised this number's not minus 200 instead of minus 155, 160.
Yeah, I guess it's reflective of the fact that there's an awful lot of questions with Robbie Lawler based on activity. Again, taking some time off, hasn't been extremely active. Meanwhile, Cowboy has been very active, and he does tend to get bullied. But I think as I watch Cerrone, he tends to get bullied less and less as he goes on. And he is he's a long, angular guy. He's going to be the much taller, longer guy in here, although Robbie does have a little reach, and Robbie's a lefty. So this happens to be, for me, Lawler or pass, and I just don't like the favorite position in a fight that's pretty close.
Lou from Gamblu.com. Check him out online at Gamblu on Twitter. Check out his website at Gamblu. We'll shoot your call later, Lou. We'll see if we can squeeze you in on Morenci Unfiltered tomorrow night. Late night, Friday night action. I wanted to get to the Manuel Ozdemir fight, the Lamas Knight fight, and everything else in between. But great stuff, Lou. Look forward to seeing what you come up with your final picks. Thanks for the time.
Thank you very much, Gabe. Have good luck, everybody.
There's Lou from Gamblu.com. Yeah, this card is so big. You see, Lou could have talked for 2 hours about this card. I was like, hey, we got to move on to the next fight, Lou. Move on to the next fight. We got to move on to the next segment. Arizona Cardinal football coming up next.
Many fantasy football players are focusing on their upcoming drafts later this summer. But the smart fantasy owner knows there's another big draft before the one where you pick the players. The first step in building a winner for the 2017 season is to draft the best team of experts for your preseason prep. So make the right selection and pick the squad at rotoexperts.com by purchasing the exclusive Edge Fantasy Football Package. The Roto Experts roster features FSWA inaugural Hall of Famer and former Fantasy Football Writer of the Year Scott Engel, nationally acclaimed top ranker Jake Seeley, 2015 and 16 FSWA award winners Bobby McMahon and Brandon Murchison, and many more analysis with impressive stats. They bring you a draft package bursting with all-pro analysis and in-season coverage that'll guide you to title glory. So pick the team to help you build the right team. Make your first important selection of the 2017 season now and get the exclusive Edge Fantasy Football Package from rotoexperts.com. Be sure to enter promo code FREERADIO at checkout for your discount.
G- Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues, as does the countdown to preseason and regular season football. We're now just 1 week away from the Arizona Cardinals, a team that, incidentally, we're about to break down, taking on the Dallas Cowboys. So it's a good time to remind you, if you want to win your fantasy football league this year, your office pool, your buddies league, or a real cash league, go over to rotoexperts.com/discount, promo code RAGE! Promo code RAGE! 20% off, rotoexperts.com/discount. You got some really, really smart guys going to help you kick ass for the upcoming fantasy football season. And in fact, I like a couple of these Arizona Cardinals a lot when we're talking fantasy football. And I'm not just talking about David Johnson, because even Kim Jong-un likes David Johnson. Who doesn't like David Johnson? I wonder if, like, in 20 years from now, David Johnson will be going to North Korea like Rodman does, trying to solve the world's crises. But nevertheless, I digress. 2016 was a year the Cardinals would like to forget, all right? They had a ton of injuries. They stumbled out of the gate. They just sort of fell apart. Bruce Arians, like, nearly died. He got so stressed out, heart attacks and heart issues. Carson Palmer got injured. They couldn't do anything right. The special teams fell apart. Everything just fell apart for Arizona. But I think it was more of an anomaly. We're talking about a team in 2015 that was in the NFC Conference Championship game. They got blown out by Carolina. Expectations were high coming into the year, but we saw Carolina stumble last year as well. It's hard to have the pedal to the metal every week, every year, on a yearly basis. They sort of hit a wall last year, but I'm willing to give them the benefit of the doubt, and I think the Arizona Cardinals are in line for a big bounce-back season. Speaking of bounce-back seasons, Carson Palmer was heavily criticized last year. He's done. He's terrible. He's got no arm strength. Well, I don't know. I'm looking over the last 5 weeks of the season. He threw 11 touchdown passes with only 3 interceptions. Anybody that follows the Arizona Cardinals knows he played good football down the stretch. Anybody that follows the Arizona Cardinals knows that he stopped throwing footballs on Wednesday. Arians told him, you're worn out. Your arm's flat. We don't need you to throw so much during the week in practices, all right? And then he carried that over into the offseason this year. And he said, man, before I was throwing 300 footballs a day and, like, getting crazy in the offseason in the summer. He goes, I didn't throw at all. I didn't throw at all this summer. I feel great. Man, he nearly ripped David Johnson's finger off the other day, all right, in practice. Carson Palmer's got a new zip on the football. I expect him to bounce back. I think he's a fantasy football sleeper. And even last year when he sort of struggled, he still put up decent numbers. Since we only have like 9 minutes for this preview, I won't spend too much time on David Johnson. He's good. Very good. And in fact, he rates as the second best offensive player in football after Julio Jones. When you look at skill, production, and the impact that a player has with a football team. Everybody talks about Le'Veon Bell all the time, but David Johnson's a freaking beast, man. The guy's a monster, and he's one of the best players in the National Football League. Running back situation, you got Chris Johnson still. Johnson's still kicking around. You got Kerwin Williams. What I find interesting is they're moving Andre Ellington to the wide receiver position. And they're sort of going to use him in a Tyreek Hill fashion. They want Ellington on the field. Ellington's shown he's not an every down back, but he can make plays. So I don't have a problem with this. I think he can make plays. Now, speaking of making plays, Larry Fitzgerald is unreal, man. I keep waiting for this dude to lose his step, but he doesn't. Well, he caught 216 balls in the last 2 years. He's unbelievable, the numbers that he puts up and the way that he takes care of himself. He's 33 years old right now. He's on the wrong side of 30, but still an impact football player. Not the deep down the field guy, but that slot guy right now. And Carson Palmer has a great chemistry with them. I think that Carson Palmer's in a good bounce back situation, and I think that John Brown is as well, especially for fantasy football purposes. Everybody's going to give up on John Brown because of the numbers that he put up last year. And they're going to say, well, look, he wasn't hurt. He played 15 games. The guy had sickle cell problems, all right? And a cyst on his spine. How tough is that? He played 15 games. He was fatigued. He was weakened. He was beaten down. It's medicated right now. They're saying John Brown's ripped. He's faster. He's stronger. The confidence is back. John Brown is set to have a very, very big year with this football team. J.J. Nelson gives Palmer another deep down the field weapon to work with. You know, it's funny, with everything that went wrong last year, with all the injuries and everything, this offense was still the sixth highest scoring offense in the National Football League, all right? Bruce Arians is an offensive genius and guru. They're going to be a top five offense, maybe a top four offense this year, in my opinion. They're going to be right back to killing it. Defensively, I don't think people realize how damn good defensively this team is. One of the probably the most underrated unit in football, actually, is the Arizona Cardinals defense. They gave up 94 yards a game on the ground, ninth versus the run. What about the pass? Oh, yeah, 244 yards, fourth versus the pass in the National Football League. Although we should stay right now, just as we told you that Seattle Seahawks defensive numbers are a little bit skewed because they get to play the Rams and the 49ers four times. Similar situation with Arizona. So we can't discount that. But you can't take away the fact the Arizona Cardinals led the National Football League in sacks. They got to the opposing QB a league high 48 times. They have an elite secondary. They're stacked at linebacker. You know, they just have so much talent, man. You know, you got Honey Badger. You got Patrick Peterson. You got Chandler Jones. Carlos Dansby is back. Marcus Golden. You know, you go down the list, and they've got playmakers on the defensive side of the football. Love the draft picks, man, of Hassan Reddick and bringing in Buda Baker as well. This is a football team that understands, you know what, our offense is already good, but we've got to get a little bit better on defense. They bring in one of the best linebackers in the draft in Hassan Reddick out of Temple. Buda Baker, very, very athletic kid out of Washington and the Pac-12. I love this defense. I really do. No, listen, Honey Badger is a big year for Honey Badger. He's got to get his groove back right now. But he is healthy. He needs to stay on the field. He only played 10 games last year. But we're hearing good things about Honey Badger as well. Oh, yeah, Alvin Bethea. Like, I don't know. I can go on and on. You know, love this team. love this team. Schedule. Love the schedule. Love the schedule. Fourth easiest schedule, man, in the National Football League. Like Seattle's, though, it's not easy out of the gate. And this is something that Arizona Cardinal fan watching right now is going to get pissed about. But look at how the schedule starts. Arizona opens up at Detroit. Then they're at Indianapolis. Are you kidding me? You're opening up the season. You're opening up the season with two consecutive road games. When I brought up the point yesterday that the Seattle Seahawks don't play back-to-back road games all year. So you're telling me, no, that doesn't put them in a bad situation. Look how the league has set this up for Seattle's advantage. Seattle do not play back-to-back road games all year. Arizona play their first two games on the road. Just sort of try to put them in a little bit of a hole. Guess where Arizona wraps up the season? In Seattle on New Year's Eve. Advantage Seattle. Just in case it's tied, let's give Seattle that home game at the end. It's garbage, man. It's garbage. I don't know why the league loves the Seattle Seahawks as much as they do, but they actually do. The Cardinals started out the season 1-3 last year. They can't do this, all right? They have to find a way to win at Detroit. They're going to go to Indy. That's Arians' first game back. They're going to beat the Colts and Pagano in that spot. This is going to be one of my best bets, actually. I'm betting big. Well, big. I don't have as much money as I used to, but I hope to put $500, maybe $1,000 on the Arizona Cardinals to go over 8.5 wins. The season win total for the Cardinals is 8.5, and I think there's value at plus 240 or so, depending on what book you bet it, for them to win a division. This is going to come right down to the wire with the Seahawks. They're both 10-11 plus win football teams.
Quarterback to receiver hookups, running back depth analysis, rookie values in dynasty leagues, deep sleepers, training camp battles. These are just a few of the in-depth features you will find inside the 2017 RotoExperts.com Exclusive Edge Fantasy Football Package. And it's power-packed with so much more, including fully sortable player projections and a custom cheat sheet generator. Plus, you get a full year of in-season coverage as a bonus. Get the Exclusive Edge Fantasy Football Package now at rotoexperts.com. Enter free radio at checkout for your special discount.
Time for our plays of the day. We're going to stick on the gridiron today. We don't really have much of a choice. It's a very, very light baseball day today. Most of the games were during the afternoon, and I didn't like anything tonight, so I didn't want to force it. I will be betting the CFL football game tonight. I hate betting against my Montreal Alouettes, but I think it's a bad spot for them. Winnipeg Blue Bombers at home tonight will lay to 3.5, although nobody's gotten Rich Lane points with the Bombers. But I think there's going to be some points put up on the board. The Bombers can score. The Alouettes are 5-0 to the under, though. They're 5-0 to the under. I keep coming back to the same score tonight, 30-24. So let's lay the 3.5. Let's take the over 50.5. And as a little bit of insurance, let's go with a 7-point teaser. Winnipeg Blue Bombers teased to the over. As the Winnipeg Blue Bombers crowd's going to be crazy this evening. The beers are going to be flowing. Enjoy the game. 1 week from NFL football. May the winners be yours.